listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Miles to Go podcast. I'm your host, Ed Pizza. When I'm not on here talking travel news tips and tricks, you can find me on my blog at pizzainmotion.com. Today we've got a pretty full episode. We're going to start out with Gene from Le Chic Geek, who's going to talk to us about how to avoid being pickpocketed when you're traveling. After that, Summer and I get together again to talk family travel. How do you figure out how many beds and bathrooms your family needs when they travel on vacation? Finally, we're going to wrap it up with Joe Chung of Disney Deciphered. He's going to help talk about whether you should stay on-site or off-site when you go to Disney World. Plenty of savings, plenty of benefits depending on which way you go. Real quick before we get into the episode, if this is your first time listening, I'd love it if you'd hit that subscribe button on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher. Subscribing to the podcast helps bump us up the ratings list. And if you haven't taken a chance to rate the podcast yet, love it if you do that as well. If you have any questions or concerns, you can email me at ed@pizzainmotion.com. With that, we'll get right into it.
If you're listening to this podcast, you know the places Miles and Points can take you. Maybe you've been saving up those miles and points to plan that special once-in-a-lifetime trip, but you can't find what you're looking for. The experts at BookYourReward.com have redeemed over 3 billion miles. That's billion, with a B. You won't find anyone with more experience to book your dream vacation. BookYourReward.com will provide you with concierge booking services to get you where you want to go, how you want to get there, and using the rewards program of your choice. All for a lot less than the cost of a domestic coach airline ticket. For listeners of the Miles to Go podcast, we got a special limited time offer for the month of May. Receive a $25 Amazon gift card with your first paid booking at BookYourReward.com. Drop us a line at milestogopodcast@gmail.com with your itinerary for more details.
And we're back on the Miles to Go podcast. I've got Gene back with me from Le Chic Geek, and we're talking about something today that I've actually never personally had happen to me, but I'm super paranoid about whenever I travel. Maybe it's because I come from New York. Gene does too, so that may be why she wrote about it. But it's, you know, getting pickpocketed when you're on a trip. You're in a foreign country. You don't speak the language. You don't really know the folks in the surroundings. So how do you keep your stuff safe? And that's what Gene wrote about on our blog. And we've got her back on the podcast today to tell us a little bit more about that. Hey, Gene.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being here in the rain in D.C. It's been raining here for a year and a day.
Yep, it's beautiful outside.
So let's get into it on pickpocketing. I've never been pickpocketed. Have you?
Yes, I actually was pickpocketed once.
Really?
Yep. So I was buying a cup of coffee somewhere, and someone walked straight into me and smashed the cup of coffee into me, spilling hot coffee all over me. And that moment, my only thought was, ow. And they grabbed my money because I had shoved my change in my back pocket while I was orienting myself. So, yeah, it was less than $20, and I got burns from it. So, yeah, thanks for the burns. I care more about that than the missing money. I think if he came up to me and said, hey, I'm going to burn you and take your $16, I would have just handed him the $16.
Yeah. Yeah. And so was it did he reach in and grab money out of your purse, or did he just take your whole wallet out of your purse?
It was the money was loose in my back pocket. So he just grabbed it out.
Got it. OK, so let's go through this a bit and dig in a bit. What, when you think about being in a crowded place in a foreign country, who are you looking for? Who are you skeptical of?
Sure. So if stock photos would lead you to think anything, you would think it's very obvious to spot pickpocketers. They tend to wear a black cap that covers their face and they look really shady, but it could be anyone. So that's part of the problem. It's sort of like you don't want to be someone who doesn't trust anyone, but you shouldn't trust anyone with your money. You should be nice to them, but it could be the young girl standing next to you. It could be the older lady across the street. It could be the nice gentleman gentlemen who just held the door for you. They really blend in, and they're experts at blending in. They're great at looking like they're tourists themselves. So it could be anyone who could pickpocket you.
Yeah, and you brought up a good point in your post that that pickpockets have a habit of joining tour groups. So if you're part of a group of folks you're going to be hanging out with for the day, maybe those folks that are in your tour group start to blend into you after a little bit, and you start to trust them a bit more.
Yeah, and studies have actually shown that people trust those who are physically closer to them than other people. And I mean complete strangers. So if I didn't know you, Ed, I would trust you more than the person down the street, just since you're in close proximity of me. So at the airport, the person who's sitting next to you, you end up trusting more. But on tour groups, you kind of end up feeling like you're part of something together. So you start thinking of the people on the tour group as people you can trust. But some pickpockets will buy tour tickets so that they could pickpocket the rest of the people on their tour. Because if a strange person bumps into you, you immediately check your pocket. But if it's Bob, who's been on the tour with you the last 2 hours, it was just Bob being clumsy. And he's been bumping into people all day because he's been taking their wallets.
Yeah, and I think another important point, too, when you think about being out in a foreign country and being somewhere where there's a bunch of people, is the person who's in front of you occupying your attention may not necessarily be the person that's stealing from you.
That's true. So this happens on subways a lot. You'll have someone who fakes an emergency. So then you start paying attention to them faking the emergency, but you might also be skeptical of their emergency and not go to help them because you're like, this guy might just be trying to assault me or take my money. But while you're watching that person having the emergency, his friend is coming behind you and pickpocketing you. So if you see any commotion, especially in a subway, an alleyway, like any place where there's a bunch of people walking back and forth, the first thing you should be doing is putting your hand in a way that protects your wallet, not necessarily on your wallet, because that will signal where your wallet is, but making sure you're protecting so that someone can't just reach in and grab it. You should also probably keep your wallet someplace a lot safer than your back pocket, which a lot of people do. You will notice a hand going into your front pocket a lot easier than you would notice a hand going into your back pocket.
Yeah, I always I used to carry my wallet in my back pocket, 30 years ago. It stays in my front pocket at all times now, anchored there. And you're right, about signaling where the wallet is, I'm probably more visible than I need to be. I try to be subtle about it, but at the point anywhere that's overly crowded and I feel like there's a potential scenario for me to get stolen from, my hand does creep down to my pocket to make sure that the wallet's still there. It's human nature for me, but it's always somewhere where, like you say, it's an obvious enough pocket that hopefully I would feel somebody reaching for it. One of the other things that you brought up in your post that I thought was interesting, because I hadn't thought about it, makes complete sense, was somebody who comes up to you to occupy your hands. And you brought up the comment about somebody who might want you to fill out a survey. Or the other thing that popped in my head as soon as you said that was somebody who walks up to you with a map and asks you to help them find something.
Yep. That is a common strategy, is occupying your hands. And if you think about it, this is very common in Paris. If someone wants you to sign a petition and you're not from the country, how much would your vote really count? Why are they trying to get you to sign that petition? So this happens a lot outside of Notre Dame in Paris, especially. There's a lot of people who will be asking you to sign environmental petitions. And what they're really doing is handing you a clipboard so the other person can come around and take your wallet. So you shouldn't really take surveys or sign petitions in foreign countries anyway, because why would they care about your point of view? But then it gets trickier when it's a couple who wants you to take a photo of them with their camera or cell phone.
Yep.
Because you don't want to assume everyone is a bad person and you want to be helpful. And if I want someone to take a photo of me, I would hope someone would help me out in that way. So you're stuck between not wanting to be a jerk and then also wanting to protect your own items. But there is a way to do it. What I do is when someone comes up to me with a camera and kind of like throwing it to my hands, like, please take my picture, I take a step back. I say, sure, 1 second. And I put up the finger too, just in case they don't speak English, like 1 second. And I rearrange my bags and I make it look like I'm just getting more comfortable. But what I'm doing is making sure everything is zipped up and everything is tucked away. And I pull my bag in towards me and then I grab their camera to take a picture. Because a lot of times what happens when someone's pickpocketing you is you realize you're not even holding a camera at that point. It's
right.
Like a broken item that kind of looks like a camera that they're handing to you. So it's also, you can tell very quickly if they're trying to pickpocket you in that scenario because they're giving you something broken to run away with. So once you realize you have a broken device in your hand, all your stuff's protected, quickly hand it back and walk away.
So let's talk about strategies for preventing pickpocketing. Specifically, let's talk about the sort of gear that you normally travel with that makes it harder for somebody to either steal your bag or get into your bag.
Yeah, the most common sense one is don't use any tote bags. They don't have any zippers, so it's very easy for someone to reach in and grab something out. But even zippered items, pickpockets are very good at subtly unzipping part of the bag and pulling an item out without you realizing that they even did that. So I like to use bags with a few different features. One is you can get some bags where the zipper can clip into place. So it's just an extra clip. It's very easy to open. You pop open the clip and open the zipper. But it's an extra step that a pickpocket would choose not to have to do, given other people to pickpocket. And I hate to say you're putting the pickpocketing on someone else, but they'll overlook you if your purse is a little too difficult to get open. Also, if you don't have that option, if you keep the zipper part towards the inside of your body versus the outside of your body, similar to what I was saying with the hand on the wallet, you'll notice a hand coming towards that part of your body versus a hand coming up from behind you. So it's much easier to notice that someone is trying to pickpocket you in that scenario. Also, avoid using the outside pockets of bags for things of valuables if you can, and try to only keep one item out at a time. So if your phone is out, your wallet's never out of your purse, and if you need to pay for something, put your phone away first and then take your wallet out, because that makes you very susceptible to that, the bump and steal, like the example of what happened to me that I was talking about before. Someone can bump into you and take one of those two items.
Yeah, and I would further say I normally carry a backpack. Sometimes it'll be an over-the-shoulder backpack when we travel with the kids. And even when I travel on my own, specifically for conferences, I'll carry, you know, a pad and pen and, you know, maybe a backup battery for my phone. Sometimes I'll even carry an iPad. But I'm hesitant to do that for most conferences because it's harder to feel that tug on the zippers on a backpack. And I think your comment about making sure if you're going to put something valuable in the backpack that it's not in an outer compartment, so it's harder for them to get at. The other thing too, for, you know, one of the backpacks that I like to travel with, an over the shoulder bag, there's actually a pouch on the front that, you know, sort of like across my chest that will hold something small. And so I will normally keep, say, my phone there instead of a back pocket, so that I can sort of like rest my hand on it as I'm walking. And, you know, yeah, okay, I'm susceptible to the stuff that's on my back, but if somebody steals a backup battery from me or a bottle of water or something like that, it's not the end of the world. I've got my valuables, my passport, phone, stuff like that.
And someone commented on my blog that one strategy he uses is that once he retires a wallet, he keeps that in his back pocket when he's traveling, so that pickpockets think they know where the wallet is. And if they end up pickpocketing him at some point, there's absolutely nothing in there, and his real wallet is safe.
Never thought about that. Interesting. All right. Well, as we run out of time here, why don't you tell folks where they can find you? We'll definitely link to the post that you have about pickpocketing, because I think it's a great sort of step-by-step walkthrough. But tell folks where they can find you on a daily basis.
Sure. Well, you can find my website at lechicgeek.com, LECHICGEEK.com. I'm on Twitter at Jeanne23, spelled the French way, JEANNE23. And you could catch me on Facebook, which I won't list out. I'll just ask Ed to include that as well.
I will include that in the show notes. And my name, Ed, is not spelled the French way. But we'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast.
And we're back on the Miles to Go podcast with a family travel tip with my good friend Summer Hull from Mommy Points. Hey, Summer, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me back, Ed.
Yeah, and so, you know, families have a bunch of unique problems. Well, problems isn't the right word, but I think you pointed out really well in
challenges.
There's a good word. You pointed out well in a recent post where you talked about that family travel is always evolving. And, you know, this specific post I was looking at that sort of got me thinking we should talk for a few minutes was about, you know, how you pick hotel rooms. And, you know, so we sort of go back and forth on it. And as I was reading your post, I was thinking, you know, I'm actually trying to make this decision for a trip, upcoming family trip we have. And it's like, all right, do I want to commit more points for a second room to have connecting room for the family of four and have the extra bathroom and the beds and all that? And it's a lot more, but boy, it sure does make things more comfortable, doesn't it?
Yes. And the weird thing about it is, as soon as you think you have it figured out for your family, somebody gets older, or there's another kid that joins, or something changes where the plan you had is no longer a very good plan at all.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened to us. We thought we had it figured out. Our youngest daughter was finally old enough. She didn't need a crib or a pack and play. And she could just pile in a bed with one of us. So we were doing two beds because she was new to that. So we needed to be in the same room as her. But now all of a sudden, she's almost three, and two little double beds on an upcoming trip sounds like a nightmare for four people. And so once again, we're back to the drawing board.
Yeah, it's weird how it can change, because, you know, our kids have sort of like come back around. There was a bit of time where they would sort of stay in their own beds, and now they end up more frequently back in bed with us at some point during the night when we're on vacation. And so trying to do that all in, like you said, you know, very, very narrow bedding arrangements gets to be difficult.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you're on vacation, and we all know a family trip and a vacation aren't exactly the same, but you know, you don't want it to be like torture at night either. And so deciding, as you say, how many points or dollars to invest in more space versus sucking it up, but then you're not sleeping well and this is supposed to be fun. It can be a really hard balance. We had great luck when our second daughter was young, putting her crib in the bathroom or the closet, as mean as that sounds. So that prevented us from having to get a second full room, but it gave everybody a little bit of better sleeping space. But we're going to the Andaz Costa Rica real soon, and their rooms with two beds are double beds, and that's the real crux of the problem here. If they were queen beds, this would be tolerable. But two double beds? I mean, I sleep in a king bed at home. I don't sleep in a double bed. So
yeah, yeah.
So we're back to the drawing board. And, of course, you can usually request a rollaway at a lot of hotels, and you can at this hotel. If you're in a suite, at least. I don't know that you can do it in a room with two double beds or not. But then the downside of doing that, because we could get a suite, is that one of the adults is probably going to end up in the rollaway bed, reality, because the kids are probably going to end up in the king bed with one of the adults, and then it's going to be too full. So we're going to be playing musical beds, and on our vacation, we're going to be sleeping in a rollaway bed.
Well, and I will say there is an advantage to the rollaway bed, as I've learned over some of our trips, where rollaway beds have come into play for the, you know, the sort of musical beds game at night. It's, you know, if you're in the rollaway bed, it's generally speaking a single bed. And so for me, being a light sleeper, the chances that I end up with a kid in the bed with me are lower. And my wife is usually the one that gets double teamed with both kids, and then she's cranky about sleep. But at least one of us got a good night's sleep.
Yeah, no, that's how it would work, too, with almost 100% certainty in our case. But, you know, it's a vacation. So Josh doesn't love, I mean, he's a tall 6'3" guy. He doesn't love ending up in a rollaway bed in a 1,000 square feet suite. But I will say, not all rollaways are created equally. There are some that are not terrible. I remember we stayed at the St. Regis, New York. It was just me and my first daughter at the time. And they brought a rollaway, adorably thinking she was going to sleep in it instead of in the king bed with me. It was a really cute thought. But I tried it, and it was amazing. I would have had no problem sleeping in that bed. So, you know, not all rollaways are the same. I've actually heard the ones at the Andaz Costa Rica aren't bad. But it's still just weird committing to, on your vacation, yeah, you're probably going to end up in a rollaway. So yeah, we're having debates now on which room type is better, being in a small but real double bed or sucking it up and realizing at least one adult's probably going to end up in a rollaway. And I don't know. We don't have the right answer for that question yet.
Well, the good news is my kids are older than you, and we still don't have the right answer, which is, you know, why I think this makes a great discussion topic for the podcast. It's just, you know, as much as Summer and I are quote unquote expert travelers, we still deal with this problem on a trip by trip basis. It's, you know, constantly in flux. And, you know, for folks that are trying to figure it out, I think there are definitely plenty of tips on both of our blogs. But, I think the goal is to make sure you're really thinking about what is it you want from the trip. How much sleep are you going to be getting? I'm a lot less likely to try the scenario where I'm cramming all four of us into a room with two double beds and one bathroom if we're on a vacation where we're going to go, you know, bell to bell, you know, like a Disney World or something like that, where it's going to be crucial for us to get good sleep and we know they're, you know, like need some time for showers and stuff like that in the morning. That's a lot harder to do when everybody's just on top of each other.
I will say for Disney, those I forget what they call them. You'll remember before I will. But the rooms that you book with your vacation club points, or you can pay cash for them too. But they're a standard room, studio villa maybe is what they call them. They're standard room, but they're really built for five people. So they have that little trundle bed that'll pull from under the TV for a younger kid. And then the couch turns into a legitimately okay bed. I've slept in it. And then you've got your normal bed, and they have 1.5 bathrooms, even in a normal room. So we stayed at that kind of room at the Polynesian, and it was great. It wasn't that you were spending the money for two rooms or a full suite, but you really had a lot more to work with than you do in your normal room. So I think Disney has figured this out for those families of four or five who are on the bubble about really needing a second room. But most hotels, that you don't get that. You've either got a standard room or you've got to buy up to a suite. And the downside of the suite is they almost always only have one king bed. So you have more space, but you have fewer beds.
Yeah, I think
fewer real beds.
I think Disney is the perfect example here in that they do really nail it with those beds. I mean, they're essentially taking a full mattress and splitting it into chunks and folding it, quote unquote, backwards, so that you get a real bed. I mean, they really are the gold standard for pull out sofas, as far as I'm concerned.
For real. Yeah, they've got it figured out. And having that extra half bathroom is also a game changer.
Oh, yeah.
It's beyond helpful.
Yeah.
And that's a great place to stick that pack and play or crib, too, and still have a functioning bathroom at night.
Yep. No, I agree. Well, we're definitely not going to solve this in one episode or in one lifetime, but it's hopefully folks will get a little bit of solace knowing that Summer and I travel with our kids regularly and still struggle with the exact right way to do this. Thanks for stopping by,
and
Summer.
And I'll add a final tip is just if you really need that second room, ask the hotel directly if they have a deal on it, because at least half the time they do have a 50% off rate for a connecting room for kids or grandparents, especially when you're traveling internationally. It's even more common than in the U.S., but even in the U.S. it exists sometimes. So it may or may not work when you're staying on points, but it doesn't hurt to ask, especially if you're paying cash, if there's a discounted second room for the kids. So
I agree completely. And you're right. I do see that more internationally than in the U.S., but for folks trying to save money and spread out a little bit when they travel, it's a great tip to consider. Bottom line, try all of these options when you're trying to figure out how you want to stay on a vacation, and then back into what your budget is and what you're comfortable with.
Totally.
Awesome. Well, Summer, tell people where they can find you before we bug out.
For sure. I blog every day at mommypoints.com, M-O-M-M-Y points. And you can find me on Twitter at @mommy_points.
Awesome. We'll have you back soon. Thanks, Summer.
Thanks, Ed.
This episode of Miles to Go is sponsored by GoGo In-Flight Internet. GoGo brings the internet to the sky, so planes fly smarter, airlines perform better, and passengers travel happier. Their new blazing fast 2KU antenna delivers industry-leading speeds, up to 15 megabits per passenger device, and is currently available on over 400 planes flying in over 65 countries worldwide. Get GoGo, travel happier.
Okay, we're back on the Miles to Go podcast, and we're going to talk some more Disney today, which is one of my favorite subjects. People see Disney trips as pretty daunting, and when I give people advice on how to tackle that first Disney trip or even their fifth Disney trip, I always tell them to try and take it apart into pieces. And so the piece that we're going to focus on today is housing, and I use that general term because we're going to talk beyond Disney property, hotels, rental options, and I just figured one of the best people to bring on for that was to bring Joe Chung back on, who we had on a few episodes ago to talk Disney stuff. And he recently started a podcast called Disney Deciphered, which you can find in all the same places that you'll find my podcast, as well as at DisneyDeciphered.com. He puts out a new episode every Wednesday with his partner Leslie. Joe, how you doing today?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, no, it's you know, housing at Disney is definitely a touchy subject. I know there are some folks who will never stay off site because they always want that 60-day early access to the FastPass system, and I know other folks who say, you know, look, I'm happy to stand in line. I want the cheapest housing possible, if you will, and that includes things like rentals and using points off site and VRBO. And so, you know, I think our goal today is to try and give a high level comparison between being on-site and off-site, which is what you and I talked about as a concept for there. I'm sure we're not going to cover everything today, but I'd say let's get started high level. Are you more of an on-site guy or an off-site guy?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it depends. You know, I've done both. And, you know, I was just, as we were thinking about the episode, I was breaking it down and kind of in my head, I feel like, at least personally, when I'm booking my Disney housing, there's four things that I'm kind of juggling. There's the convenience for my family as a, you know, family with three young kids. There's what I, for lack of a better term, called Disney convenience, like how close are you to the parks, how easy it's to get there. Does it make your life easier by staying inside the Disney bubble, like if you're on site? There are hotel amenities, like what you would think about if you were staying at any hotel, right? Like, you know, does it have a lounge? Does it have free breakfast? Stuff like that. And then there's the cost. So those are the four things that I'm kind of always trying to juggle and find the best, like, equilibrium for when I'm booking my Disney hotel or my vacation stay.
Yeah, that's fair. And I would say that from my standpoint, you know, equilibrium generally leans towards being on property and generally leans away from what specific amenities the hotel has, because even if we're not hanging out if we're not, you know, hitting the parks super hard, we generally don't hang out at the hotel a ton. Not that some of the pools at the resorts can't be awesome, but you know, we tend to be park goers, or we're out shopping, or we're having meals. So I've generally leaned towards on-site, even though I've done off-site a couple of times. You know, from an on-site standpoint, you know, I think the 60-day early access to FastPass is one of the biggest benefits, but there are certainly others. What do you see as some of the other benefits? You mentioned proximity to being on-site versus off-site.
Yeah, so right now, you know, I would say, like I said, I've done both, but I think unless the real benefit of doing something like renting an apartment home is if you're traveling with extended family, like when I go with my parents, you know, my parents are helping out, like it's good for us all to be in one big, like 4 or 5 bedroom apartment. And some of those can come with like private pools, so that's nice as well. But for the most part, when it's just our family traveling, I'm leaning much more towards on site right now as the kids are young, just because there are various Disney-related things, Disney convenience things that you're paying for that also kind of dovetail with family convenience things. So, you know, I really appreciate having the Magical Express, which is the shuttle bus that takes you from Orlando MCO to your Disney hotel for free. Or it's not really free. You're paying for it as part of the price of your Disney hotel stay. The one reason I really, really like that is not because I like getting a shuttle to the hotel, but it really helps with us and our kids because you can check your bags all the way from your home airport all the way, and then they'll just show up at your Disney hotel room. And I find that to be kind of invaluable when you're navigating an airport with two or three children. The 60-day FastPass window, like you said, is very nice, you know, especially if you want to get some of those tougher to get rides like Flight of Passage in Pandora or the Frozen Ever After ride is still wildly popular in Epcot, and obviously Seven Dwarfs Mine Train in Magic Kingdom is still tough to get. You know, having that 60 days is really helpful. However, you know, they have extended that to some what they call official Disney World hotels, even though they're not technically on site. And this is mainly the Disney Springs hotels. Like there's a bunch of hotels near Disney Springs, and also the Swan and Dolphin, which I know you really like. So you kind of don't need to pay Disney prices to get those necessarily anymore. There are also extra magic hours for people who stay on site, which means you can either get into the park really early at like 7 or 8 a.m., like an hour before the general public can, or you can stay really late. That is not as useful to me right now just because, yes, the Magic Kingdom might be open until 1 a.m., but I'm not going to keep even my 5-year-old out until 1 a.m.
Yeah, I agree. We've done some extra magic in the evenings, but it's usually when the park hours are you know, earlier closures than the, you know, normal midnight times. You know, you bring up a good point, which I I wrote about a while ago, and I need to double back on those properties, the fringe properties that they added over by Disney Springs. It was originally reported that you would not be able to use points for those. The Hiltons and the Best Westerns and that stuff is sort of like off the corner there. And I'd heard reported by somebody recently that you could use points there now. And if that's true, that expands the number of places you can stay on site, get 60-day access to FastPass, get access to the transportation system, and still be able to redeem points to significantly reduce your costs.
Yeah, so I was actually doing some research on that this morning. I actually booked a dummy Hilton reservation to test this out, because technically in the wording of the announcement, it said, you know, you have to book these official Disney World hotels. Oh, I should also add, there are hotels – it's all confusing, all this terminology, but there are hotels called good neighbor hotels, quote unquote.
Right.
Basically, that means nothing. That just basically means they're within 14 miles and you can buy tickets at the hotel. So that's not what you're looking for. The term you're looking for is official Disney World hotel. But like we said, you know, it's the Disney Springs one or the Swan and Dolphin. Anyway, I booked a dummy reservation at the DoubleTree by Disney Springs with Hilton points. And I called Disney to try to link my reservation today. And the representative I was talking to said – I probably called too early. They said with reservations that you book on your own, like through Hilton.com, which is what I did, they take, you know, maybe 72 hours to be able to link to your My Disney experience. But she said, as long as we can link it, you know, I will get the 60-day FastPass window and the extra magic hours. So it sounds like, you know, even though they said you have to book through Disney, book these hotels through Disney to get those benefits, it's not like that anymore. And she seemed like she seemed to imply that it wasn't going to be a problem at all. And, you know, it just would take a little bit of time for the reservation to register, which, you know, kind of makes sense to me. Like, it doesn't matter where you book it from as long as you're at that hotel.
Yeah. And I can say, having stayed the Swan and Dolphin a number of times, that I generally see the sort of same behavior in terms of reservations showing up in my Disney experience. I generally see it in about 24 hours, and I call it 24 business hours because I've seen it take slightly longer if I make a reservation on the weekends. And my understanding is that the interface that they use at Swan Dolphin is similar to the interface that the folks at the Hiltons and the Holiday Inn and the Best Western that are over there behind Disney Springs are using. So it wouldn't surprise me if that all works out. And I consider that to be a big added benefit, you know, being able to use points and defray those costs. Because I think one of the other big benefits for staying on site, and I think this is much more specifically for shorter stays. If you're going to be there for a week or 10 days, it's not as big a deal. But in terms of cramming everything in a short trip, like a 3 or 4 day trip, you know, folks who haven't spent a lot of time at Disney may not understand that if you stay off site, you're going to get dropped off, or you're going to park if you're going to the Magic Kingdom at what they call the Transportation and Ticketing Center, which I mean, is a solid, easily 20 minutes, if not 30 minutes, to get into the park from there. Whereas if you're staying at one of the on-site properties, they're going to bus you right to the entrance to the Magic Kingdom. And I'll caveat that by saying I have no idea if that's actually what happens with the Hiltons, Holiday Inns, Best Westerns that are on the fringe or by Disney Springs. But that's definitely the case for Swan Dolphin.
Yeah, no, those Disney Springs hotel shuttles also drop off, like, you know, at that bus station. If I'm not mistaken, I think I've done that before. You just reminded me. I was listening to your episode when Summer was on talking about the Universal hotels, which was pretty interesting. The one thing I would say is, you know, hopefully people know this, but the one difference between Universal and Disney on-site hotels is, for Disney, you get FastPass. I don't want to say for free again, but you
built in.
Yes, FastPass reservations are built in with the cost of your ticket, unlike Universal, where you either have to pay extra or you have to stay at the Universal hotel to get it. Anyone who buys a Disney ticket will get the opportunity to book 3 FastPasses. So, you know, I think that's just something for people to bear in mind. You don't have to – I don't want people to think that they have to stay at a Disney hotel to get that. You get an extra 30 days on your window if you do that, but, you know, just to make sure there's a difference there between Disney and Universal.
Yeah, you get access to the best the most popular rides in the park earlier by staying on site. And as you mentioned earlier, staying off site has its benefits as well. And I think, you know, the biggest one is in consolidation of costs. Whether you're staying with family and you can grab a bigger hotel room or a rental nearby, gosh knows there are just absolutely tons of them. And one of the other ways that those can save money is that instead of eating in the parks or near the parks, you can come home and you can cook. You have grocery and you have kitchens or kitchenettes, grills, things like that. And those can really help defray the cost of a Disney trip if you're trying to do it on a budget, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, I can give you a great example. So my parents and the four of us at the time, this is before the newest baby, we were going for like 5 or 6 nights or something like that, maybe 5 nights. And I had originally booked 2 rooms for our 2 families at Port Orleans Riverside, which was running at about $200 a night. So I just remember that it was around like $2,000, maybe $2,400. I don't know if it was 5 or 6 nights for the 6 of us to stay for those 5 or 6 nights. What I ended up doing was renting a rental home through this company called Sweet Home Vacation that a friend recommended to me. And I looked at their website just today, and it seems like it's gotten much more robust than it was 2 or 3 years ago when we did this. Anyway, we rented a 4-bedroom apartment with 3 full bathrooms and a kitchen. And, you know, that was only like $150 a night. So we ended up spending like $850, and that's including all the extra parking that we had to pay for, because we had to park to pay. I mean, we had to pay to park at the theme parks, which we wouldn't have had to do if we stayed at Riverside. And we ended up, you know, eating outside the Disney bubble a lot more. So we saved a lot of money. But, you know, I guess I just bring that up to say that if you're on a budget, you know, staying offsite is, you know, you're going to be able to save a lot of money doing that. And like you said, with the Disney Springs hotels and the Swan and Dolphin, you know, if you're using points instead of cash, you're saving money, but you can still get some of those benefits that we didn't get when we were using that Sweet Home Vacation rental.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you and I have a lot more to talk about and debate when it comes to hotels. I definitely want to have you back on for an episode to talk about the difference between the different resorts. I know we have to have a deeper DVC, Disney Vacation Club, versus just paying for your hotels discussion at some point. And normally this is the part where I would transition and ask people where they could find you. I'm going to take it off the rails for just a second and say that, you know, if you're thinking about a Disney trip, even if you're not a if you're not a novice anymore, I would definitely recommend the Disney Deciphered podcast. One of the things I think that that Joe and Leslie are doing really well with the podcast is they're keeping the episodes very themed, very focused. They're, you know, call it 15 to 20 minutes. And you can, you know, if you don't want to listen to everything, you can literally scroll through, and they've got, you know, Magic Kingdom 101, Animal Kingdom 101, you know, Disney housing. And so you can really just listen, take 15 minutes, hear some great tips about a very specific piece of your Disney vacation that may help you save money, reduce stress. Anyway, bottom line is, if you're listening to this podcast and you're enjoying listening to me, I would absolutely tune into Disney Deciphered.
Thanks, Ed. Really appreciate that, and really love the work you're doing here too.
Cool. Well, thanks again for being on, Joe. I'm sure we'll have you back on again soon.
All right. Take it easy.
Thanks, guys. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. If you're listening to this podcast, you know the places miles and points can take you. Maybe you've been saving up those miles and points to plan that special once-in-a-lifetime trip, but you can't find what you're looking for. The experts at BookYourReward.com have redeemed over 3 billion miles. That's billion, with a B. You won't find anyone with more experience to book your dream vacation. BookYourReward.com will provide you with concierge booking services to get you where you want to go, how you want to get there, and using the rewards program of your choice. All for a lot less than the cost of a domestic coach airline ticket. For listeners of the Miles to Go podcast, we got a special limited time offer for the month of May. Receive a $25 Amazon gift card with your first paid booking at BookYourReward.com. Drop us a line at milestogopodcast@gmail.com with your itinerary for more details.
As we wrap up this week's episode, the final two pennies is about staying on top of things. I don't want this to sound like a commercial for my blog, although we are going to talk a bit about it. But the reality is that whether it's blogs or newsletters, if you want to travel for cheap or free, you need to stay on top of a lot of different sources. I track over 100 blogs and try to skim through them all on a daily basis through a newsreader called NewsBlur. But the reality is that deals come from all different kinds of places. We saw $265 round-trip flights to Europe from the West Coast this week. There's an incredible deal for the Park Hyatt St. Kitts down in the Caribbean, where you can book rooms for under $200 a night all in when you fold in resort credits and other special promotions. Under $200 a night is incredible for a 5-star Caribbean resort, something that you may never see again. So, you know, as all these deals come up, it certainly can be a question of, you know, how much time should you spend tracking this stuff? And I think that's where it always makes sense to make sure that you're going back through your goals and figuring out what your goal is. What's the next trip you're planning? What's the trip after that? What potential things might you have coming up? And making sure that whatever you're spending in terms of credit card spending or whatever time you're spending tracking deals matches those goals so that you're not losing sight of a potential great deal. You can't look at everything. Even as much as I read, there's still plenty of things I miss and plenty of things I don't have time to talk about here on the podcast or on my blog, Pizza in Motion. The goal here is make sure you pick a few sources, try to find a good way to follow them or get that information on a regular basis, whether that's through Twitter or Facebook or email newsletters, and constantly make sure that you're always looking at how you can leverage a deal to accomplish those goals. There are plenty of ways to travel free or cheaply using points, and I can't emphasize enough that this is very achievable even if you haven't gotten started yet. That's a full wrap on this week's episode. If you're enjoying listening to the show, I hope that you'll subscribe to the podcast and rate it on whatever platform it is you're listening to. You can find us on iTunes and Google Play and SoundCloud and Stitcher, and we should have some good news about some other places that you can find it coming up in the next couple of weeks. If you have any questions, please shoot us an email. For now, you can shoot an email to me at ed@pizzainmotion.com. Happy to answer any questions that you have on an ongoing basis and also feature those on future podcast episodes. Special thanks to our sponsors, BookYourAward.com and GoGo, for helping bring the Miles to Go podcast to you on a weekly basis. And we've got some fun stuff in store for you next week. So tune in again this time next week for more tips, travel, and news about the travel world. Until then, thanks for listening. We've got miles to go.